Hi, I'm Brittany Ashley, your host of Breaking Norms, Building Dreams, your guide through this transformative journey in both business and life. This is your place crafted for dreamers, doers, or anyone who has been told they can't. Get ready as we challenge those narratives together. You're tuning in live to the United Public Radio Network, airing on 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. We are streaming on all the popular platforms every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join me for a candid and thought-provoking conversation celebrating your unique journey because you are worth it. Hello, everyone. I'm so excited to be here today on this lovely Monday with Danielle. If you're just tuning in for the first time, I'm your host, Brittany Ashley, and we are broadcasting live on the United Public Radio Network, UFO Paranormal Radio Network 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. Get ready to escape the next hour with Danielle and I as we break norms and build dreams. I'm so excited to have you, Danielle.
Yes, thank you. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
For all the listeners, Danielle is located in Victoria, BC, as so am I. And I've been talking to Danielle since Christmas about coming on to the show. Nice. So I'm like so excited to talk to Danielle, to share her insights on counseling, more background, also on motherhood and all the things. We'll just make it a fun conversation today. So no stress, anybody listening, put your comments in and leave anything for us so we can answer them along the way. I'll just do a quick little bio on Danielle, and Danielle, you can tell us more because who wants to listen to me speak all the time?
Sounds good.
Everyone, this is Danielle, is both a registered clinical counselor and a Canadian certified counselor. She has a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology from the University of Victoria and a Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology from Yorkville University. Danielle has worked in for many years as a child and youth counselor at the Island Health in patient psychiatric facilities in children and youth. Love it. She is passionate about the supportive outcomes of therapy and proud to hold the title of a registered clinical counselor. I'm so excited to have you, Danielle. This is like one of the topics I really wanted to like dive in more deep with as we chatted in December. I feel like there's kind of that kind of negative notion on counselors. Why should I have a counselor? Should I get a counselor? Like all of the things. And so today, I'm excited to dig in deep with you, change those narratives, and get everybody, you know, getting their counselor.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
I'm so excited. How about you fill everybody else in on your journey and how you became a counselor? I know I just said high level, but let's, dig on in.
Thank you. Yeah, I have to say becoming a registered clinical counselor was absolutely a journey. You know, I really valued and loved the school counselors I had growing up, you know, not that I had anything. And that's the thing, one of the norms, you know, you have to have some big glaring issue, but often there's just life in and of itself is really hard. And I loved my junior high school counselor, Mrs. Richardson. And that was always in the back of my mind, what a cool, you know, job she had. It was so meaningful. And then as I went through life, you know, I received a degree in psychology, like you said, and then I became a stay-at-home mom for many years. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, will I ever have, you know, a job that makes income? Being a stay-at-home mom was great. I feel like it was really meaningful. But I also thought, you know, will I ever have something else outside of that? And I was fortunate through meeting different people and different opportunities, and I landed as child and youth counselor. At an inpatient psychiatric facility for children and youth, and did that for a long time. And it was really through that work that I really became cemented that going further with counseling is something I wanted to do. And and then as a mature student, you know, someone in their mid-30s, went back and did my master's, and was fortunate to then finish and then start my own practice. So that's, yeah.
Yay. And for anyone listening, let's just highlight there, we're never too old to go back and learn, change our careers, because I find like everyone kind of, there's like that, sometimes that stigma around that, but really in reality, it's really, let's change our mind frame and let's be more in tap to who we want to be and the passion that we want to follow. So I'm so excited Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. And you know what? I have to say, I had always done, you know, school right through, you know, and my undergrad right through. And there's a lot going on in those early years. And in contrast to doing my master's as a mature student, you know, someone, it was great. Like, I really felt like I valued it. I appreciated it. It was much more satisfying. I enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah, I love that. I find too, like, when you're in college, or not college, high school, what I was trying to say. I just remember, like, the early years of being like, so Brittany, what do you want to do with your life? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Eat a pizza. I don't know what I want to do with my life. And I was like a bit younger than a lot of others too, because my birthday was a little bit later in date. So I felt like I just turned 17, still trying to figure it out, graduating, like where. And then also too, even thinking about living by myself, like that's like another spin on it as well. It was nerve wracking. And so I personally decided to just hold back and figure out things, but I've changed my careers so many times. So that's why I like to joke, like I'm a hippie at heart, because I was in the tourism industry, tech, like all the
things, name it.
Right. But now I'm here and I wouldn't even change it. And I've been adding to my career in my 30s. And I find that a lot of people, when they're like, oh, I want to change the direction in my 30s or 40s, 50s, whichever, kind of, it's a scary thing. But to step into it, I want to like say yay, because I'm so excited that you've launched your practice.
Thank you.
Yeah. And that's kind of how we connected through the chamber. And I'm so excited to like,
First person I met at my first Chamber of Commerce event in the parking lot, as neither of us knew where to go in this beautiful Pearson College grounds. Together we found it.
We're just like, what way do we go? But yeah, let's dig in more on, maybe you can kind of educate at a high level on what is counseling? Because I feel like so many people get confused with what is counseling, what is therapy, and even coaching.
That's a great question. You know, I think a lot of times counseling and therapy can be appropriately used interchangeably. You know, I think there's a lot, that either speaks to the same. And when you have counseling, you know, you ask one person, they might tell you something different than the other person, but there's some main foundations that really are present. And that's having a strong relationship with your therapist. It might not happen during right away in the consult. It might not happen during the first session or the second session, but you are getting the sense that you're safe, that you're trusted, that you're heard, that this is someone that connection is going to foster that positive well-being, that growth, that freedom, release, whatever it is that you're really hoping for. And sometimes things you don't even really know you're going in for, you know, you hear people get into counseling with one main issue and other stuff comes up. And so I think as long as you're having the space where you are sharing, you are safe, you're having a chance to just go deeper and you're doing it with someone who is experienced in that field that you feel connected with. And, you know, and sometimes some people meet a counselor and that might be someone they see for years and years and years. You know, sometimes some people go to counseling just because life is hard or they're going through something. And maybe what they're really looking for is, you know, 5-10 sessions, you know, to help them through a challenging time. Mm. And then they've gained enough skills and they're feeling good. And then they don't maybe need that consistent support.
Mm-hmm. I think you and I discussed too that, because I've had counselors in the past. I've had a range of different kinds of counselors. I feel like when I was in the school setting, it felt like it was more academic in a way with the counselor than actually like having that space to talk. Even in university, actually, too, I felt like it just kept going circling back to then versus the problem of why I showed up. And then there was when after in one of the previous episodes, I did talk about this high level that I did go through abusive relationship. And
I'm so sorry.
We had to go through I had to do all these proceedings and all these things. They recommended me going to see a counselor. I'm like, who needs a counselor? Because like my brain, right? It was like
so common.
I've been through all these things before seeing a counselor in that kind of setting. So in my brain, I was like, how is a counselor going to help me now? Mm-hmm. But like you're just saying, like, it's a safe place for someone to show up, knowing that that they have that place to kind of have that conversation and not being judged. And I feel that in today's world of society, unfortunately, you just never know who you might have that conversation with that you might feel judged, or that piece of it, versus a counselor that is just that safe haven, really, I want to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know what it is? It's often the, you know, the 50 minutes in your day where you don't have to put on the pretense. You don't have to put on the airs. You know, let's say you're maybe a high level executive, or you're working your day-to-day job, or you're a stay-at-home mom, whatever, but it doesn't matter, because in all of those different situations, we are trying to present ourselves. Maybe we're masking. Maybe we're trying to keep it together because it matters. You know, I have to be bringing home my money. I have to be doing this. I have to meet these demands. You go into counseling, you don't have to pretend to be anybody but yourself.
Yeah. And I love that, because that's that safe place. Sometimes you need that safe place because you're just trying to, like you're saying, mask to be like maybe that perfect mom, that perfect employee, all the things. You're really trying to put on that 100% exposure. Like imposter syndrome can roll into this. Being that perfect person and having that fear of feeling like you're not competent enough. So showing up and having those pieces roll off your shoulders a bit more, you're feeling a little bit more relaxed. And also maybe in that session, you can have a better game plan of what direction you want to go.
Yes. And that's what we find with therapy that tends to be, you know, productive, especially for the client's perspective, is because they are bringing so much. And it comes from that place of comfort and ability to share fully. You know, sometimes I think of it as like a satisfying tennis match. You know, it's back and forth. You know, we don't, you know, it would be naive of me to meet any person and think I know what's best for them, or I need to tell them what to do. And that's not really what it is. But within the conversation, with the questioning, where people are saying, well, they're being vulnerable, they're sharing, they're bringing up, they're countering, they're correcting their therapist when it's not right. Yeah. All of those things gives the therapist so much richness to then pull through, and then together, like to really get somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Do you find people could use a counselor and therapist at the same time, like interchange, or are they kind of, how would you see them kind of more or less working together?
Well, the question is kind of it's a really good question, because here in BC, the term, you know, counselor isn't designated. So anyone can say they're a counselor, anyone can say they're a therapist. You know, what does that mean? Gotcha. You know, it could mean a lot of different things. The registered clinical counselor term is one that's designated through the British Columbia Association of Clinical Counselors. Okay. So if someone says, at least in British Columbia, there, someone says they're an RCC, a registered clinical counselor, then it means that they've gone through a certain level of education, that they've had supervision, and they've received that term. But I know it's different in the States and in different provinces across the country too. So really, I think if you're looking for anyone, like a counselor or therapist, you know, ask the questions, right? Like, what's important for you? You know, is it important that they are registered, or is it important that they've had a rich life history where they've traveled and done lots of things, and maybe that's more important for you? So yeah, I think the term, I don't know that it's, yeah, the one person can say they're a therapist and one a counselor. I think it can be, they can be used interchangeably.
Yeah. Okay. And then I'm just going to circle in too, because we had in a previous show talking about coaching, and we always have Nadine come back every year. Every month she comes in, and her and I are considered coaches within the International Coaching Federation, ICF. Okay. And so really, what we've been educating some of the listeners too is that you can work with a coach, and then you can also work with a counselor at the same time. And having mold together, it's such an impactful, insightful, like enlightenment for you.
Yeah. Well, I think you touched upon it, right? It's rarely ever just one thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And if we can and we're able, we have such increased resiliency by letting other people in. You know, you have a coach, you know, you have a counselor. If you're able, you're maybe you're going for massages. Maybe you have a friend you go for walks with, you know, a sister that you're calling, you know, it's adding those people and those resources in, and it all just adds to it. It's just, you know, pluses along the way.
Yeah. And one of the things you and I talked to briefly on is that not one counselor or even a coach, say, will fit you. So it's okay to go in and have those conversations, and it's okay to kind of be like, no, sorry, like, I just don't think I'm the right fit. Because I think we need to kind of break down that stigma that when you're seeking a counselor, it's just like you're not just like one size fits all as well.
100%. I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I will say it is hard to find a counselor. You know, often I'll have people say, you know, I was got exhausted looking through psychology today trying to find people, you know. And again, that's a snapshot of information. So you really are having to kind of put effort into finding people. So I say that in the sense that I get it when you hear people say, well, I don't want to have to go through all that again, you know. But at the other hand, you're worth going through all that again. If it's not working for you, and it doesn't have to be because they're a bad person or they're a bad therapist, it could just be maybe your needs have changed or you're not finding this fulfilling, you know. And if it is you and you are able to say, you know, I don't think it's really working for me, I might go look somewhere else. I mean, it should be by the graciousness of the counselor to really honor and respect that as their person's autonomy and as a personal and beneficial choice for their well-being.
Yes. Yeah, I love that, because going back to my general notion that I was talking about working with a counselor that I had was like recommended to go talk to one, I was just kind of given one that the courts kind of assign after going through abuse. And so it was just kind of like in a way of like, oh, I'm given this person, I must use them. And I wish, looking back on it now, that I should have asked or gone somewhere else, because I really didn't really feel connected to that person. I just felt like they were attacking me after coming after the whole situation and going into a counselor that I just felt like was attacking me. Like, I'm very soft-spoken and very like quiet, and I just felt like I was getting thrilled with questions, and it, to me, it didn't leave like a very good taste in my mouth. And so right. So I just felt like that's why I really wanted you on the show, is just to educate other listeners that it's okay to be like, no, sorry, you're not for me. I'm going to go find somebody else.
You know, there's this other counselor, I know she's amazing. She's been doing forever. And, you know, I don't even think she accepts a wait list, you know, it's full. And she says, you know, I'm not everyone's cup of tea. Like have people come through, you know, people who's, you know, it's not the right fit. And that's the point. It's a fit, you know, and you'll know. And as a counselor, we know too, like, you can get a sense sometimes with people where it is really like, this is working very, very well. And then sometimes, you know, it's a place of like, you know, trusting my gut. Is this, no, this isn't going to work for me, or do I need to give it a few more? And sometimes that can be a piece of it too, because there is a little bit, hey, trust your gut. If it's not working, it's not working. But if you do have a sense that maybe there is something there, and you're willing and able, it's not bad to have a few sessions to get a sense if that comfort level is shifting in a beneficial way.
Yes. And at the end of the day, like, because I'm a working perfectionist, and also trying to remove being like the people pleaser, because being a people pleaser, it can get away of a lot of your own boundaries and your own self-worth. And so that's something I know. And this is why I'm saying like 30s is great, because it's like, move out of the way. Absolutely. I'm gonna do whatever I want. Or even in your 40s, because you're finally in that realm of like, I don't care, because I'm putting myself first. But the thing is like having that notion and understanding too, that it's okay for you to have those boundaries in place, even with people that you're wanting to work with to become the better version of yourself. So if you feel you're not working with that counselor, coach, whoever, it's okay, hairstylist, whichever.
Absolutely. You know, and I love what you said about being a people pleaser, because I think like a lot of us are. I absolutely deal with that too. You know, I want to, you know, I think it comes back to the mother piece in me. You know, I want to take care and care for people. Yes. But yeah, boundaries are really important. And, you know, I think it's one of those throw around words people talk a lot about, you know, oh, but just institute boundaries, just have boundaries. Well, sometimes if we have to do a boundary, it's because there's a need there that we have to maybe address, and it's hard to do that. But even within counseling, yeah, if there's some things you don't want to talk about, you don't have to talk about it. You know, like, yeah, some people might want to talk about their childhood. You might make a lot of sense the way they were treated as a child, why they act the way they are now. But some people might go, you know what? Yeah, this happened to me and I dealt with that, or I'm not ready to deal with that. You know, it wouldn't be prudent for someone to say, well, no, you should talk to me about that. You know, that wouldn't feel like a very safe way to go about it.
Yeah, exactly. So I find like understanding, and that's, I've been saying this when I talk to other people that are coming onto the radio show, or who are wanting to come on the radio show, that I find that the radio show too is like my own like self-healing journey on my own way of where I want to be and where I want to go, because I've always envisioned like these things. But you have to like really look and reflect on yourself on how you're going to show up to be the person that you want to be present. So I'm so excited that you're here today, because let's dig in on like youth counseling. Cause I do think that is something that I wish I probably had.
Oh, well, you know what? I feel like it's only within the last 5 or so years that just people started even talking about going to counseling, you know, back when we were kids and teens. I was fortunate with the counselor at my school, but I don't think I would have ever thought about going and seeing someone in the community or anything like that. It just wasn't a thing that people talked about or did. But yeah, I definitely enjoy that age group. You know, I counsel kids, teens, adults, couples. I kind of see everybody. I'm spreading the net pretty wide. But I have to say, kids and teens, and this is broad strokes. They'll kind of tell you what it is, you know, and there's that transparency, that willingness to really try. And I find, especially with the younger generation kids and teens, you know, it's not necessarily, let's say you have a teen who's worried about going to counseling, or a kid, it might not look like this back and forth conversation, right? Because we have to get back to the rapport. That's the foundation of it. Does this kid feel comfortable, you know? So, you know, it might seem from a parent who's paying, oh, they played Uno. You know, what did they do that for? Well, Uno might be a place where they're playing a game. They're seeing how their counselor's responding to winning or losing. They're maybe throwing out a few vulnerable little feelers, you know, maybe sharing a bit about that was hard or something they don't like about their sibling. And then as we have more and more of those interactions, it's okay. Yeah, I can actually talk about the stuff that's really bringing me down. So I would say, especially with kids and teens, you know, you're using the same approaches, right? You're validating, you know, you're building upon skills and resiliency. You're working and addressing attachment stuff, but you're also really being intentional about making it comfortable. And I say that to the kids, you know, when I meet them, I say, it's actually your time and it has to work for you.
Yes. No, I love that, because I feel like if you put a lot of pressure, well, it's kind of like a full thing here we're looking at. Like, you want to build that safe space, and it's going to take time with kids, especially. Unfortunately, like when you say you're going to a counselor, I feel like there's still that stigma of like, oh, what's wrong with you? And it's like, well, no, actually nothing. Well, maybe there is something wrong with me, but
but it really doesn't have to be big. Yeah. You know what? I will give credit this generation who's in the university age, they are amazing pioneers for normalizing it. I really have to say, when I have them, they're so just empowered. You know, they come in it with this attitude, like, of course I would have a counselor. Like, why wouldn't we have someone that we can reflect and be supported by?
There's RW saying here, I went to see a psychiatrist one time for depression, and he gave me something that didn't seem to work right. And I asked me to come in and talk to someone, one about my childhood stuff. I think it got cut off there. But the thing is too with because you might have some take on that about depression in generalness. Because a lot of people, it's good to kind of go in to see counselors, and maybe you're going through some kind of depression, and it's that open space to talk and feeling safe. So you're not feeling, it's not in, didn't go back is the last pit bed there.
Yeah, it sounds like you didn't feel comfortable digging into that piece. And you know, I think that's wise to recognize and understand what you are willing and wanting to work on through that journey. Because especially if someone is going through any sort of depressive episode, the reality is things are harder. Like things that used to bring you as much joy are not bringing you as much joy. Mm-hmm. So I say that with the caveat, because really what does and is an important part of working with depression is that behavioral activation piece, you know, and with a trusted counselor, with a trusted psychologist or someone, you know, it's a piece of that is, you know, encouraging yourself to have graded, easy tasks. I'm going outside. Maybe I'm just going outside for 10 minutes. I'm just getting some sun. Maybe I'm making my bed. You know, maybe I went to the grocery store. Okay. Those are the things that we're doing. And, you know, and I think another piece of counseling that can be helpful is in the midst of that, you can talk yourself down and say, that's all I did. You know, that's all I did was go get groceries. That's all I did was make my bed. 1 degree shifts. We're not looking, you know, I often think if I wanted to be very corny, you know, I'd put some sign up or something that just would say like, we're not going for perfect. We're not. I still haven't met anybody who's perfect. We're just going for better. We're going for better. We're addressing in sometimes the low hanging fruit. You know, I think as adults, we can talk ourselves into these big fancy, you know, it needs to be this and this and this. Mm-hmm. Often our base needs really matter. And through supportive counseling, we're addressing and we're realizing where are the areas that those gaps aren't being filled. You know, is it sleep? Am I really struggling with sleep? Why am I struggling with sleep? Oh, I can't turn off my head. You know, I'm thinking about all these different things that come up. Okay, let's identify that. What are some of those issues? Okay, and why at bedtime? Oh, because I haven't allowed myself any time during the day to think about it. Okay, so how do we schedule that? How do we find a way to productively consider those thoughts then so that come bedtime, we can sleep better? So, you know, a lot of different ways and a lot of different ways to kind of address and...
Yes, I find... I came across a TikTok and it's just along the lines of if you're going through depression to be open about it to maybe close up. And then that person who's a close friend, instead of that person coming in asking all these questions of what they can do about it, come in a way of how to be present than asking, throwing them more questions if they're going through that disparate depression state of how you can just show up and be present. Maybe it's just to show up and go watch a movie with them, being like, I'm here next to you. We don't have to talk, but if you need me, I'm here, without giving them more of bring in through that cycle, right? I can't remember. I need to write his name and put it here so I can reference him, because he is a TikToker I always follow, and he is a clinical psychologist out in Nevada, I believe. And so, like, I always follow his stuff. I was like, yes. I'm self-diagnosing myself.
But you know what? There's some good stuff out there. You know, there are things in you here. You know, I see on social media now people talk about being overwhelmed by the noise of their small kids when their small kids are being loud and rowdy. And I love that that's being so normalized, because when my kids were young and they were loud and rowdy, I don't remember anyone talking about, you know, how, yeah, a parent might feel overwhelmed, might need breaks from that. That might be really hard for them. You know, it was more like, well, of course, that's what happens when you have kids. So, but going back to what you said, first of all, yeah, not hiding it, sharing and talking like and to people you trust, I think that's really huge. And I love that idea of just being there for someone, because I know I went through a really challenging grief journey at one point, and everybody was just loving and doing what they could, but I got a lot of like, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? What can we do? I couldn't even tell you what was up. So it was helpful having people who just brought groceries. Right? Who just let me cry.
Like Brandon says, just having someone there, even doing silently is more meaningful than people realize. It's the support.
I love that. I think that's just it. I think if we tell ourselves a story, you know, that feeds our isolation, I think that can be really detrimental to our well-being. If we start to close ourselves off, we start to say nobody would understand, you know, we start to, you know, make our world a lot smaller and we lose a lot of the connections. But when we let people in, you know, if we have support through a counselor, through a friend, through someone, we're sharing it now. It's not just me. I'm not just carrying these heavy bags. You know, someone is coming. They're putting a little bit of support. They're lifting up a bit as well. And then maybe I can handle and I can move forward for myself in ways that I maybe wouldn't have been able to if I didn't let anybody even know.
Yeah. And I feel like any listeners out there just thinking about somebody, just give them that call too. I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. To normalize like the phone calling a bit more, because we're so just like, let's just text or we'll message you when I see you kind of situation. But like, I have a list of people that I always call on a daily, just of a check-in, or a monthly of a check-in to make sure that all is good, or just to annoy them that it's Brittany calling again.
Well, Brittany, I am also an 80s, 90s kid, so talking on the phone is my jam. Yes. You know what you said that I think is such an effective strategy is, and again, this is where I say sometimes for adults, I think we want fancy solutions, but I'm trying to make it easy as possible. Keeping lists. If there is friends, let's say you went out for friends. Oh, Brittany and I went for coffee, had fun. Make a list of people who are fun and easy to hang out with, because I guarantee you, if you're feeling depressed and isolated and no one likes you, it's going to be really hard to think of those names. Don't make it hard. Write some names down of people you connect with, people you like doing, you know, write some things down of things you like to do, you know, oh, I like to put on the new Beyonce album and sing. I like to bake, you know, all that stuff sounds so obvious when you're feeling good, but when you're having a harder time, it's not as easy to access that. Your prefrontal cortex, you know, the main part of your brain, the smart brain, when you're under stress, it's not working that well. So I'm all a fan of lists, keeping things easy, keeping support. You know, with kids, we do sometimes things called like a cool box, like a toolbox. Yeah. Put some stuff in it that's calming and soothing for them. You know, if your kid's feeling really escalated but is able, maybe you got some essential oils in there. Maybe you have a fidget. Maybe you have some things. Hey, is that one and done? You're never going to have any issue. Is it always going to work every time? Remember, we're just going for better.
Yes.
But it gives you options. It helps maybe bring it from a 10 out of 10 down to a 7. It's the same thing for ourselves. We're just working to bring it down.
Love that. We're already almost halfway through here. So for anyone just tuning, listening, welcome to Breaking Norms, Building Dreams. We're live on the United Public Radio Network and UFO Paranormal Radio Network 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. No, I love that idea of like the fidget and all of that. Like I was actually just saying, being a little bit vulnerable today, I guess, on my show, to my husband, feeling like so much anxiety. My anxiety was so high the last week, and this week seems to not be as bad, but whichever 2 weeks ago, it was very high, like the highest I've ever like felt like it was. Week was like not as bad, but still that level of, because like I'm self-diagnosed with ADHD, and so I feel like maybe my ADHD was triggering so much extra anxiety that I didn't even know what to do. And so going back to your list thing, that's smart, because when I was having that state of anxiety, like I couldn't even think straight. I couldn't even focus or even know what to do with myself, because I was in the state of anxiety that I couldn't even move myself forward. So having that, like maybe like a post-it note somewhere that you can have something that's really accessible. Yes. I love the idea that you have.
There's another thing. I mean, well, first I'll just say, I hear you about the anxiety. I think it's one of these things, you know, I say to, you know, this analogy worked a lot better before electric cars, you know, but I used to say what cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, really says is that it's not that we do or we don't have anxiety. So I used to say it's like a gas tank in a car. We all have it. But now, I mean, like not everybody always has it because we have electric cars. But, you know, there's different degrees of it. And sometimes it's not going to be so much, you know, like when I'm on vacation and I've been there for a bit, I've settled in. I'm not really too worried about much, but I come back, I got a million emails, I got this and that. Yeah, of course it's higher. And then again, sometimes it's high for reasons we can't even really put our finger on. Mm-hmm. So I like, but the other thing I do, so CBT is one of these modalities that's really trusted, been around forever, cognitive behavioral therapy. But there's another therapy that has some pretty helpful tips if the anxiety is just like, I'm losing it. And it's called dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT. And it's created by Marsha Linehan. It's just amazing. You know, she wrote this memoir I read just a month or so with my book club called A Life Worth Living. And she has many, many practical skills. And one of the things that she says is, and is helpful, is called TIP skills, T-I-P-P. And it's if you're at a place where you are just like, you're beyond, you're absolutely done. What she says is to think of the acronym. So the T is for temperature. You know, try to change your temperature. You know, some people, believe it or not, put their face in ice water. Hold your breath. Can you do it? Holding ice cubes, taking a hot shower. You're doing something to kind of shift it up, you know? Yeah. And then we have intense exercise. You know, I got to be honest, like if I'm feeling stressed, it's probably the last thing I want to do. But think of good you feel
exercise.
I know. How good you feel after you like go on your Peloton for 20 minutes, like getting your heart up there, you know? And again, with all these things, if you have a heart condition or something, right, you need to be checking with your doctor first, especially for the ice dunk, right? But you know, maybe you're doing some squats, you're doing some jumping jacks, push-ups. And then, so that's I, intense exercise. P, progressive muscle relaxation. Progressive muscle relaxation has been around a long time. I remember as a kid, our hospital had a tape of progressive muscle relaxation. And I think this is another way it was destigmatized, is my mom would put it on in the living room and we'd do it together. And we would go through progressive muscle relaxation. There's tons on YouTube, Insight Timer. Someone will speak you through tightening, say, your feet, releasing your feet, noticing the difference, tightening your calves, tighten, release, tighten your thighs, pinch, release. Mm-hmm. And you go through up, because how often when we're stressed, we start tensing, we start doing all of this without even realizing it. And then the last one is paced breathing. And, you know, and people will say, you know, breathing. When I first heard it, I thought, of course, breathing, whatever. But the reason that breathing works is because of the neurobiology of our amygdala. Our amygdala, the fight, flight, freeze. If we are breathing really fast, you know, it doesn't know if I'm just sitting at my computer, you know, paying bills, or if I'm being chased by a dog down the street. You know, it's all it's sensing is the fast breathing. Slowing the breathing down, doing some square breathing, in for four, hold for four, out for four, hold for four. As long as, you know, it's really you do what works for you. Sometimes some people just breathe in and try to breathe out longer than they breathed in. So those are tech skills. Yeah.
Love that. Thank you for sharing that. I find, like, I already know my breathing levels are horrendous. After working with a physiotherapist, I'm like, oh, thank you for letting me know that I don't breathe. Like within your diaphragm. Like they're like, you don't fully
breathe.
Proper breaths. I'm like, huh, interesting. It's probably because I've always been in that state of fight or flight mode. So So my body is just in that state of always fight mode. So the breathing mechanisms for me, like I think I'm breathing, but I'm not. So it's just like such, like I had, like I'm still here and there working with her, but like it's, I've given myself a thumbs up. Good work.
Brittany, you deserve that thumbs up.
Just like practicing those breathing techniques, and even too, like when the anxiety is so high, of like taking that step away of, or even trying to figure out like what's triggering it.
Yeah
trigger point.
You know, and you'll hear people talk about different grounding techniques. You know, you Google, there's lots. And that can be another thing. If I'm like in a situation where I'm in, say, I'm in a long lineup at the bank or the passport office or something, maybe I'm starting to get stressed or they're even going to get through me before they close. Maybe I'm just looking around. I'm trying to notice everything that's blue. Okay. Yeah. Now I'm trying to see, what can I hear? How many different sounds can I hear? You know, I'm just bringing myself back in. Yeah. What do I smell? You know? What are the things I can feel? I'm just trying to bring it down a little bit.
Yes, I like that. Because even too, like, talking about the little lineups, like, oh, I hate lineups.
Oh, like, that's such a thing for me. Uncontrolled lineups where people are everywhere.
Like, I like COVID a little bit because you knew that it was kind of empty. No one was stepping in a bubble.
100%. I would used to go, they still, hot yoga still happened and it was like half the class. And I remember thinking, oh, this is how it should always be. There's way less people here.
So funny. Going back to a bit of the youth counseling, I just wanted to swing back over there because I find that I know that we're kind of our shift in the different generations. I don't like saying like we're millennials, boomers, whichever. I can't keep track. I just like to say that we're switching our mind frames a bit differently as we go throughout the years. And we're just seeing the notion of the support counselors can have to youth because there's a lot we're thinking. Look at youth today. We have technology. We have social media telling them what they can do and not do on a different level. How they should look for girls. Like I was watching a TikTok or that Dove commercial that was built by AI. I don't know if you saw it.
No.
So it's a Dove commercial that was, I guess, generated by AI. And it was you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I'm going to look it up after.
But more or less, it was just like, this is what the girls look like at 10 years now. And you know, they're all doing their TikTok dances and belly shirts and whichever. And then you girls, like, you know, when we were 10 years old, like Spice Girls or whatever, like sweaters, hair pulled up, like a completely different what a 10-year-old looks like now, especially right now. I noticed that so many young girls are going into Sephora, getting serum. I don't know. You really think you need serum, maybe just sunscreen when you're going in the sun.
Even that, sometimes we didn't have sunscreen either.
Right? Our, like the generation before, like we just went out in the sun and whichever. So like the we're living in a world of such more, what's the word I'm trying to look at or pop my brain of, so much more noise is, I guess, in the world for girls, boys growing up that they're kind of getting a little lost along the way. And so having a counselor, I think, is good for them to kind of talk these things through.
Yeah. Well, I think you're totally right. You know, I would wager being a teen is never one of the easiest phases in a person's life, you know, and you often hear, you know, one generation, you know, reflect on the next. But I think what you said is spot on. There was and there is a whole different element with screens and social media and the easy ability to compare and to find your faults in yourself at, you know, like this. And that wasn't necessarily a thing even back when we were teenagers and you know, you see a lot and hear a lot of teens talk about the comparison piece and how am I not like this, or this person likes this, or the texts and the things I was excluded from, you know, and all those pieces just speak to a real hurt, you know. And I think the thoughtful, you know, and if you have a counselor and you're able, you know, it's countering and challenging some of those thoughts, you know, that say, oh, I need to be, you know, 10 pounds lighter and then I'll be prettier like my friend, you know, and, you know, and maybe it's acknowledging that, yeah, most humans feel like they're kind of not measuring up, you know, that's true. And let's also ask, if you did lose 10 pounds, then would it be gone? Would there be any other thing that comes up? Well, no, there's probably something else. Okay. So let's keep that with a grain of salt, right? Those insecurities are going to be there and they're going to be present. And let's validate it is a lot harder for them. And then how do we support? Well, maybe we do that. We gently challenge and remind ourselves that fixing that one thing or changing that, it might just allow space for another insecurity. Okay. Who am I? What's the work that I'm doing that addresses What am I good at? What do I like doing? Who do I like being around? How do I feel when I'm doing my sport or when I'm with the people I like? Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I feel pretty good about myself. You know, I don't really notice that I was like super sweaty or my makeup was messy. Okay. You know, like, and I'm working to really sort of address and understand for yourself, where are those places in your life and with people and what activities where you kind of come outside of that, the little circle of the social media and the comparison and the pressure, and allows you to just be present with your pets and your family. And if, you know, if you're lucky enough to have some people around you that make you feel pretty good.
Yeah. And I think it's, I was just looking down because I was looking at some of our questions that I know that we kind of created before the show. Just kind of about that, creating that community. So do you have any tips for anybody listening who maybe thinks that they don't have a community, how to even start a community?
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I think community is, I think it's so important for who we are and who we are as people. You know, I think when we have others around, we have the chance to really feel support. But that's not to say that it's always going to be easy. And, you know, and I think with all things, we have to allow ourselves permission to try, meet some people. Maybe they're not the right fit. That's okay. That's how it happens. But you're recognizing who you like to be around. You're being brave, you know, and I think the thing is, you know, and I hear this, you know, from a lot of people, especially teens, you know, what are people thinking about me? What are they saying about me? You know, well, the reality is, I have to suggest, is more often than not, people are more worried about themselves and what I said. You know, did I misspeak? You know, what am I doing? You know, yeah. And when you recognize that more often than not, people are more worried about themselves. And let's say you go to, you know, one of my little tips too, is if you go to someplace like a party or a gathering, people are usually there because they want to be social. So mm-hmm. I encourage you, you know, if you're trying to make community, go to some gatherings, go to some, you know, there's an open house at the, you know, they're just in my community. They had a park, come tell us what you want about the Colwood parks, you know, come and share. And people who are going to those things, you know, more often than not, are there because they wanted to talk and chat. If you didn't, you probably would still just be home in your room.
Yes. Well, what I just, because I think I told you that we got a new pup. And so what I did was, because we have Facebook groups here in different communities, yeah, did an outreach to the Facebook group as a whole, being like, who has a pup? There's no one ever at this dog park. I swear no one knows about it. Can we arrange like just a general, you know, play date for the dogs?
Love it.
Yesterday did not go well though.
Well, see, that's that'll happen.
Like I was just joking with my husband. I was like, trying to be a good fur mom over here, going all out on Facebook, making all these new connections for a different kind of community for like dog fur moms. And of course, Ko was just being rude and we had to leave.
Your puppy was the troublemaker. Oh, that's funny.
I was like, sure. Now you're making me look like the bad one.
What? I bet you everyone else thought, oh, at least it's not my dog. At least my dog isn't. You know what else?
So embarrassed.
Oh, gosh. You know, and I think too with community, you know, it's a nice way to look outside of yourself too. You know, I think we often see ourselves mimic within our groups, but if you have a chance to go to, you know, like a choir or a sports team, or you're going to just like a drop-in mic night, you know, challenge yourself to talk to someone who is maybe older than you, has different interests than you. I have this one girlfriend and she has a tight-knit group of mom friends kind of around her age. Mm-hmm. And then somehow along the way, there's this retired woman who's in their group and they love each other so much. And I often think that's so amazing for her and for the group that they didn't think, no, you know, you don't look and have a baby like we do. But instead they all had this great time. They got to go celebrate her like 50th at the Oak Bay Beach Hotel in the summer. You know, it's like, amazing. I think it's that variety.
Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't hurt to make a list of maybe there's things that you thought that you wish you would have wanted to do in your life and you never got a chance to do it. So look at like different kind of groups and outreach that way, different community groups, yes, like you're saying, and just try to push yourself. I'm like an introvert extrovert. So it takes a lot for me sometimes to go to these events or whichever, but I do, once I'm there, I'm like, okay.
Challenging and recognizing. That's a big piece, yeah. Right? I think our anxiety can be, you know, it can be faulty prophetic. You know, it'll tell us, oh no, you can't go. You'll say the wrong thing. You won't have any fun. You know,
yeah.
You know, I read this once. It said our thoughts, let's say like that, they're just the best guesses we have, right? They're not necessarily facts. I don't know that I'll have a bad time. Maybe I'm guessing it because of some of the ways I'm feeling, maybe some past history, but I don't actually know. And until I get there and give myself a chance, maybe I tell myself, I'm going to go for 10 minutes. Maybe I'll do a little lap. Or maybe I'll go challenge myself to talk to 2-3 people. And that's, you know, that'll be about that.
That's like, I used to be pretty good, I think, before COVID, but I think since COVID, like I'm a little bit more in my bubble then, but like I always try to push myself of like, okay, you've seen some people that you already know, go say hi, now go and meet 3 new people, go.
Yeah. Oh, you're like, so good at that. I've seen you network. You have introduced me to so many people too, which I thought was amazing. Like the Camosun College event, you were like, yeah, here, let me introduce you to these people. And you know what? And maybe that's a place of countering any sort of fear we have in that. It's like, maybe I'm going to help and connect others, right? What's my value in this? Am I going just for me to meet new people? That's fine. Ooh, but maybe I'm going to introduce and help others. And that makes it a little more, maybe a little more proud of that.
Yeah, 100%. And I love connecting people. Like I'm a connector. Yeah,
you're good at
that. I love to connect you with, like, if you're like, Britt, I need to meet so-and-so. I'm like, I'm on it.
Yeah, you're good at that.
I'm like, I really want people to be connected and just support each other, because I really think we need that more in the world today of lifting each other up than bringing each other down, especially women in business and moms in business. And I just really want, and I'm so passionate of bringing that forward. That's why I started my business. So I when I met you, I just loved meeting another mom in business too and connecting you with others.
Oh, well, it meant so much to me. You know, nobody in my family had been a business owner. I'm still, like, even now, I'm still figuring that piece out. And then I realized, and it's the same thing I go back to with things that scare us, we have to give ourselves permission to be a learner. You know, we have to understand and accept discomfort is going to be a part of it. And once I recognize that, okay, I'm a little less afraid of it because I know it's going to be there. And I'm trusting that with time, with connections, with different people, you know, it will get easier. And that's the hope.
Yes. And just putting yourself out there is the one step at a time.
One step at a time. And that's the same thing with finding a counselor, connecting with friends, you know, one step at a time. You know, you might meet with a counselor and you might not want to tell them the deepest, darkest secret right away. And what I often say is that makes sense. You know, and another thing with youth, you know, it's sometimes, or adults or anybody, let's say you're brand new to counseling, the counselor's not going to expect that you're going to come in and know how to just perfectly share what's going on for you. It might be the first time you're really talking about it. That's okay. It's okay.
And that's the thing. I feel like we as society sometimes feel like we're getting, yes, judged, but then also that it's a test. And so if we don't say the right thing right away, we're going to, like, especially I keep self-diagnosed with ADHD, but if I don't, and perfectionist / people pleaser. So if I don't say the right thing, I'm just going to, like, start spiraling out of control, or I'm constantly trying to, like, craft that perfect sentence. So I remember having an interview. This is when I was, like, trying to figure out life and being a hippie of all the jobs. And I remember it was like, I quizzed myself, all these things. And this guy's like, okay, so what does a submarine do? I'm like, oh my God, no, it's not on the S. It was for the Navy. And I was like, well, the submarine, you know, goes underwater. I don't know how much.
Yeah, what do you say about that?
My brain was like going crazy. And he's like, he called me out on it. He's like, I'm not looking for the perfect answer. And to this date, we don't even know how deep the submarine goes. I'm like, oh.
We're not looking for the perfect answer. You know, I think we do. I think a lot of us, we live in a culture where we think it has to be perfect or it's not enough. And sometimes we do have to really show up and do have to really do a good job.
Yeah.
But we're also just humans and we're all just making mistakes and kind of just trying to do our best at the end of the day. Like I say, you know, I still haven't met anyone who's perfect and has it figured out, you know, certainly not myself either.
Yes. And that's a big thing, biggest takeaway too. Well, few takeaways. One, everyone needs a counselor, no matter what, just like everyone needs a coach, like I've always said.
Do it. Yeah.
Nobody's perfect, and start and really curate those communities of support to help you when you're in your lowest lows and even when you're in your highest highs, so you can have those people next to you.
You touched on a really important part. You know, I think if you have a counselor, like I've had people who start counseling when things are kind of a-okay. And I think that's such a smart way to do it too, because then you have someone you've met with a few times. If life takes a turn, you can book in a session.
Yes.
You know, it's like, you know, the whole gas, you know, the service engine light thing, you know, and sometimes we wait for that. We wait for a car to be on empty, but we don't have to. We can fill up our gas tank at any state. It can be halfway full. You can go fill it up.
Yes. Yes. I love that. I'm just looking at our time. We're almost at time. Is there any last minute notes, takeaways you want to let our listeners know?
Well, thank you, Brittany. I just want to say, you know, this has been really exciting. My first time doing something like this. And I knew, of course, when you asked, I thought, well, what better hands would I be in to do this? And I do feel really passionate about counseling. You know, there's, I won't go on too long about it, but there's a really exciting and effective treatment for those who've been through trauma. It's called EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And if that's ever something you are, let's say anybody who's listening, who's been through some trauma, I would really encourage you to Google that and see if there's someone in your community too. It's called EMDR. And that's a really helpful way to work through trauma and things that have been maybe something we're stuck on. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say, I'm so grateful to be a counselor. I'm so grateful to do the work I do. In my practice, you know, I'm able to see clients in person in Victoria, and then I can see clients virtually across Canada. And but you know what? I encourage you, wherever you are in your community, ask around, talk to your friends, you know, open up, say, hey, I'm kind of thinking I might want to see someone. I guarantee you, you'll be surprised at the people who will say, oh, actually, you know, a few years ago, I was through this and I saw this name. That's a great way to not only open up, share a bit what's going on, and to find some names of some trusted people.
Yes. Actually, after the show, I'm going to introduce, talk to you about somebody I met recently. I think you guys would be a good collaborator. Okay. So remind me after the show because I'll forget.
Okay.
Well, I just want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. A big thank you to the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Next week, we welcome Linda to the show. Linda and I used to work together at the tech industry, and I've always looked up to her my whole life. She doesn't know this. I'm super like pumped that she's coming on. She has helped build startups like Joni. So I'm so excited to have her on the show and woman empowerment and all the things next week. Mm-hmm. So until next week, remember, your journey is unique and your worth is unquestionable. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.